three things have triggered this episode of Cut the Clutter. One is just the takeaway from our recent election travels, mostly in eastern Uttar Pradesh, but also from my colleagues who have traveled elsewhere, with people saying with so much joblessness now, joblessness is a big problem. It is exacerbated by the fact that government has not been holding recruitments for the armed forces. No recruitment rallies have been held for almost 2 years now. So what's going on? When we checked, the answer we were given, and that is something that Rajnath Singh, the defense minister, has also said in parliament on March 22. He said that, look, because of COVID, for 2 years, recruitment rallies have not been held and new recruitments have not taken place. So that was one thing. In the process, the armed forces now have a shortfall nearly of 150,000 people. Army itself has a shortfall of nearly 150,000, 140,000 people, and I'll give you some details. Second, there is an article today by Lieutenant General H.S. Panag, who is one of our most respected former army commanders, a thinking general, and he has looked at this shortfall. And he has said, look, there is a shortfall, right? This is today, by the end of this year, will be about 2 lakhs for the army, which means a shortfall from the existing, pre-existing strength of about 15%. So he says that this is a good opportunity. Please do not fall into the trap of trying to fill up this shortfall. In fact, cut the size of the army by another 10%, because you need a high quality, high tech, high skilled army. That's an interesting thought. Now, the third thing that's happened is that just as I was reading General Panag's article, I also saw an article on Bloomberg, and this is an article by one of Bloomberg's Pentagon correspondents, Roxana Tiron, and this article quotes the US Army Undersecretary Gabe Camarillo saying that for the first time in more than 20 years, the size of the US Army has come below 1 million. In fact, that 1 million is also very qualified. So the existing or authorized size of the US Army was 4,85,000. These are regular full-time soldiers. That has now been cut to 4,73,000 in this year's budget. So this comes down by 12,000. Now, if you add to this the National Guard, which the Americans have, and also the reservists, this now comes to 9,98,500. So just 1,500 below a million, but still notionally below a million, which is a big landmark. And there the Undersecretary for the Army, that is Gabe Camarillo, has been quoted as saying that, look, the nature of warfare has changed. We need more technology, artificial intelligence, cyber capabilities, and we need smarter, better educated, better informed soldiers. So the numbers don't matter as much as the quality of soldiery. So we will go looking for better quality soldiers and in the process make some sacrifice on quantity. It's also true that the US Army had a bulge as this millennium began. Why? Because they started new wars, one in Iraq and then in Afghanistan. So they added numbers. Now they've been reducing numbers. So the landmark figure this year is they go below a million. So these three things. One, this feedback that government has not been holding recruitment rallies for 2 years. Second, General Panag writing that this is actually an opportunity to make your army leaner, meaner, and also more effective and more mobile. And third, the US reducing the size of its army below 1 million after more than 20 years. So these are the three things. Now, look at what General Panag is saying. General Panag actually gives us an analysis from data. He tells us, and I'm sharing all these articles with you, he tells us that on 10th of December 2021, Government of India stated that the shortfall in the army was 1,02,955, say roughly 1,03,000. He says since then, this must have gone up by at least 20%, if not more, because every year 60,000 soldiers retire. Now, the fact is that while they've been retiring and the government says they have not been holding recruitment rallies because of COVID, normally you would have expected for a very conservative establishment that with our northern borders being under such stress, the Chinese sitting in Ladakh, maybe a call would have been taken to extend the retirement age for all those who were retiring in these 2 years so as to maintain the numbers. But government did not do that. Was it an oversight? I don't believe so. I believe this was seen as an opportunity, right? Because now, as General Panag points out, even if they start recruiting at a much higher pace, there is a limitation to how many more you can recruit suddenly, because there is a limitation of the capability or the capacity of the training academies to train these people. Because you know, you can increase the capacity by 10%, 20%, 30%, but not more than that. So he says, even if you up your recruitment rate by 30% or little more than 30%, which is the max these academies, they'll be stretching to the seams, even then it'll take you 6 to 7 years filling this gap which has been built. And he says, please don't fall into the temptation of filling this gap. On the other hand, use this as an opportunity, reduce it by another 10%. So he says, by the end of this year, since your number for the army would have gone down by about 2 lakh, which means a reduction of 15% over the top strength, top contemporary strength, reduce another 10% after that. And the rationale behind this is, he says that the armies of comparative countries that India looks at, those are 30 to 35% smaller than India's armies in terms of manpower. All right, he says, we have a lot of mountain borders in the Himalayas. So those consume a lot of infantry, a lot of passes had to be protected, lots of peaks, ridges have to be protected. So India needs more infantry. So maybe not cut by 35%, but cutting by 25% is a possibility. And in fact, is desirable, and you can transfer the same money to enhancing capabilities, firepower, mobility, technology, cyber warfare capabilities, artificial intelligence, drones, and things like that, because that is how modern wars are fought. Now, what he's also done in the process, he's actually picked up quotes or lines from Prime Minister Narendra Modi's speeches at the successive Combined Commanders Conferences. That's an event that happens once a year. And he notes a pattern that each year, beginning with the first one on 17th October 2014, he has been pushing or nudging the armed forces in the same direction. That is, prepare for shorter wars, prepare for sharper wars. You need more mobility, you need more technology. And see how the language changes. The full quotes will run on the screen as I'm talking. And we are lifting these quotes from General Panag's articles, because he's taken these from Prime Minister's speeches at these conferences. So 2014, 17th October, the Prime Minister said, full-scale wars may now become rare and duration of conflicts shorter. That's why he says we have to transform and reform. So remember Mr. Modi's favorite phrase, reform, transform, perform. So that is the message he gave in his first speech as Prime Minister in 2014. And then it's carried on. Now, 15 December 2015, once again addressing the same conference, Combined Commanders Conference, he said that, look, we now have to see the changing character of economies, technology, and with that, character of militaries and warfare will change, and we have to make an objective assessment of all these. And he says that, look, the dream or the idea or the ambition that you should have modernization of our armed forces and expansion at the same time, that is difficult. Also, he says it's unnecessary. So his exact words are, this is a difficult and unnecessary goal. You will read the exact words on the screen as we go ahead. And then he says, what India needs now is agile, mobile armed forces driven by technology, not just by human valor. So today's warfare or tomorrow's warfare, he says, will be won not just by human valor. Human valor is important, but the era when soldiers would put bayonets on their rifles and charge the enemy in their bunkers, that era is now more or less over. You now need technology. You should win wars using technology, minimizing the human risk to human life. And that is how drones and cyber warfare and all that stuff is coming. So he said this, and he said in the same speech that we need capabilities to win wars swiftly, because luxury of long drawn out wars, long drawn out battles no longer exists. Then further on, the most recent, the Combined Commanders Conference at Kevadia in Gujarat by the side of the Sardar Sarovar Reservoir, he said that we have to now optimize personnel planning. What does that mean? That means control your numbers. So optimize personnel planning. Now that is a line straight out of an HR director's copybook, right? Optimize personnel planning, keeping in view changing technologies, because Indian Armed Forces must evolve into a future force. Now, this is where the political direction is coming from. So once again, the idea we are talking about, which is that in today's era, the numbers of human beings, they matter, but they are not the key thing in determining the strength of a set of armed forces. Even the US has gone below 1 million now for the army. So for India also, time has now come to invest, to divert to more resources to technology, to weaponry, to standoff weapons, to electronic warfare. And really, today's warfare, it's very simple. The equation is now very simple. Of course, the braver soldier will win, but that braver soldier for winning also has to see the enemy first. So whoever sees the enemy first will win. And for that, you need technology, electronics, satellites, intelligence, all kinds of new high-tech stuff, artificial intelligence. And that money is needed. Now, can you provide money for both? In the best of all worlds, you could print money and provide money for both. So once again, I will refer to you to an article by another very respected general, Lieutenant General Prakash Menon, who's held the highest positions in Indian Armed Forces. He's now at this wonderful independent think tank called Takshala in Bangalore. He also writes for us. We are privileged to have him also write for us. And he has, in an earlier article, which I'll share with you, actually pointed out that all these ideas are fancy and they are fanciful and impractical. That you can have these pensions and salaries rising like this, and at the same time, your modernization budget also keeps on rising. You simply cannot do it. You have to understand that the country has limitations, because you might say that my defense budget is less than 2% of my GDP, is too little, but it is a much higher percentage of India's budget, India's larger budget, because GDP doesn't belong to the state. GDP belongs to everybody, you, me, anybody else who might have helped me with this research, the panwala who runs his little shop under my office, all of them earn, and that contributes to India's GDP. The GDP does not belong to Sarkar e Hind or Bharat Sarkar, right? So they can't take vacuum clean everybody's money and they say I'm distributing it. So government has a limited budget. You have to find money for health, education, anti-poverty schemes, poverty support, all kinds of things. So what looks like less than 2% of GDP is actually a lot of money in budgeting terms. So to expect India to allocate a lot more, of course, push comes to the shove, money will be allocated, but it is impossible in peacetime, and it is impractical and unnecessary to think like that, because we are not North Korea or Pakistan. We will not starve our people, or we will not bankrupt our treasury or have a balance of payments crisis just because we want to have an oversized military. At the same time, size doesn't matter anymore, because what matters is technology and firepower. So he points out in that article that actually data is very clear. Data tells you that while Modi government has implemented OROP, which they had promised and the Congress had promised, politicians promise all kinds of things when they are out of power to get into power. But you know what? Once you order something in a restaurant, you might do it to indulge your guests or maybe impress your neighbors. But when all that order is delivered, you have to pay for it. There's a price. So BJP promised OROP. They implemented OROP in 2014-15. So General Prakash Menon points out how between 2011-12 to now, the share of pensions in the defense budget, overall defense budget, has risen by 11 percentage points. And you will see this chart on the screen. That makes it very clear. In 2011-12, on this chart, the defense pensions are 18%, 1/8 of the national defense budget. Whereas the money available for capital acquisitions, for gola barood, fuel, etc., 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 for ordnance stores, modernization, buying tanks, aircraft, submarines, ships, all that is 36%. So pensions are half of your capital budget in a way. What has happened now? What has happened over time is that pensions from, say, 18% have now risen to 28%, a little over 28%. That is about an increase of 11%. Where has that money come from? Because percentages remain the same. Percentages come out of the same pool of 100. That money has come from your capital budget. So, capital budget from 36% has come to 25%. Capital budget 36 to 25. Pension budget 80 to about 28, 29. So, basically, we are paying out more as pensions out of the same kitty and starving your armed forces of modernization. In fact, in the year when the Air Force had to pay so much money out for their Rafale purchase, their budget had actually been cut. That is what Modi government has now been trying to address. Now, if you add a couple more things to it, again, if you see this chart, if you add pension and salaries, if you add pension and salaries, and see on the other hand what's available for modernization and for keeping your ordnance stores. So one problem that arose when the Chinese came calling in eastern Ladakh was the armed forces said, but we don't have ordnance, we don't have gola barood for more than a week or 10 days of fighting. And they said this may be a longer war, so now stock up for 40 days or so. Right, to do that, at 40 days also, they had to calculate how many days of intense fighting, how many days of light fighting. Now, you don't have a deal with God on how that will go on. But that costs a lot of money because in the past, because the armed forces haven't had the money to buy and store ammunition, they haven't been able to do it because what's available has been coming down. So, what was 36% has now become 25%. And I think this year's budget, you might see a little bit of an improvement, right? Maybe closer to 30%, but pensions and salaries are still high. A little bit of the pension bulge has eased, slight bit, mainly because in the previous years, government also had to pay arrears for OROP. That arrears burden has gone, but still this year, pensions for the armed forces are 1,19,696 crores, that's almost 1,20,000, plus 20,000 crores as pension bill for civilian employees for armed forces. That is 1,40,000 crores. Whereas all the money available for all modernization, including stocking up on ammunition, etc., is about 1,52,000 crores. And salaries are 1,54,000 crores. So now, if you have to find more money to buy better weapon systems, you see all this fancy stuff floating. You see all these drones, right? And you see drones now, they're making tanks look so bad. Also, tanks need to be modernized. Tanks need to have different kinds of armor. You need helicopter gunships which can fight the enemy from a distance, withstand off weapons, because helicopters also are very vulnerable now. You need surface-to-air missiles. Most importantly, you need electronics and you need range. You need range so you can spot or find the enemy earlier, and you need weapons also with the range so you can strike the enemy before the enemy can. And we have seen an example to our cost and our detriment of how that gap can work if that gap is on the other side, if that gap is adverse to your side. And that happened when those Indian Air Force aircraft went up to challenge Pakistani aircraft when they came in for what they called as Operation Swift Retort. That Pakistani missiles, those F-16s that had the AMRAAM missile, they outranged Indian missiles by a long distance. So to fire at them, Indian aircraft would have to get much closer. And while they got that much closer, they would continue to be in the range of Pakistani aircraft. Now, that gap is now being filled with Astra missiles, which are made at home in India, but also with Meteor, etc., which Rafale has brought. But we saw the telling difference that the ability to see the adversary early and the ability to attack the enemy from a longer range gives you, and the adverse implications when it happens on the other side, then whatever number of people you have does not matter. What that means then is higher casualties. And we are seeing some of that happening in this Russia-Ukraine war, because Russians are using very old-fashioned style armed forces, a lot of armor, etc. You can see them suffering a lot of attrition. Normally, we would have expected that when a military superpower goes out to fight a much smaller, a tiny country, a tiny military power, which just began building its armed forces a couple of years ago, then they should have a much more one-sided outcome. But that is not happening because you can see the technology, standoff weapons, drones, they now enable the other side to play a very different kind of warfare, which increases attrition. So more numbers now, massed forces mean more attrition. So armed forces have to get smarter. If they get smaller in the process, that's all for the good. And that's what the Prime Minister has also been saying in his speeches year after year to the armed forces at the Combined Commander Conference.